This is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back. I'm here with my co-host, my favorite co-host, and only co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we're here today, and it's kind of interesting because I contacted Carol and said, well, we're through with the Back to Basics series. And Carol said, oh, no, we're not. We've got something really important to speak about. And one of them is an essential electrolyte. It's very interesting because when we think of the main electrolytes, that's potassium, calcium, magnesium, and sodium, we're looking at essential electrolytes that the body needs in varying amounts. Now, we all know how important magnesium is. We've spoken of it many, many times. And the required amount that we're talking about when we're dealing with magnesium is about 470 milligrams. When we're dealing with potassium, we're looking at 4,700 to 6,000 milligrams a day. That gives us pause to think about, really and truly, let's look at what potassium does for us, why we need it, and are we getting adequate amounts? What do you think about all that, Carol? Many questions in one sentence.
The word electrolyte that you used, Corinne, was essential. Potassium concentrates inside the cell. Sodium concentrates outside the cell. It's the energy and the concentration between the two that creates a differential between inside and outside the cell. And this causes a flow of energy, which is why we call these minerals electrolytes. They control the biophysics of our body, our energy body. So they're so important.
Well, we don't really think of it this way, but each cell is its own little battery. And they maintain their electrical charge. And that's maintained by the dance of these electrolytes. And in order to maintain a balance within and without the cell, the body has created a sodium-potassium pump on all of our cells. And what that pump does is it pushes out sodium and calcium and pulls in potassium to create the balance. And this is a little battery here that we're having, thousands and thousands of electrical batteries maintain balance. Or actually, we could call it an imbalance. And what it moves and how it moves is through osmosis, through the charge, through the density of the fluid. And it moves passively in and out of the cell, but constantly. And that balance, or we could even call it imbalance, which Carol brought up, is essential to our health and our ability to function. Now, when we're talking about potassium, what are we looking at? We're looking at brain function and neurologic signaling. We're looking at, so what are we looking at? We're looking at dropped words, which I just dropped one just now. We're looking at forgetting memories or forgetting things that you started the sentence and in the middle of the sentence, where was I going? And that happens to many of us. And that very directly can relate to potassium. But we're also looking at heart, because the ability to maintain even heartbeat, it is essential to have potassium. When potassium is too low, we start skipping or putting in extra beats, because there is one of those little potassium pumps in the heart regulator. And we even can measure that on an EKG. We can measure that our potassium is irregular by the way that the volume of the beat. But we're also looking at muscle. Now, our ability to stretch and pull muscle is based on the balance or imbalance, as we want to say, of magnesium, calcium, potassium, to name but a few. And if our potassium is low, we can stretch out that muscle. We have trouble maintaining that flexion, but at the same time, we have trouble pulling that muscle back in. So very often when you're exercising and you start getting stitches and cramps, what are we dealing with? We're dealing with low potassium. Carol?
So there's so many signs of potassium deficiency. You've already mentioned several. So muscle and bone aches, especially the lower back. And lower back issues are rampant in our population.
Oh, how many of us? Yeah, wake up in the morning with that lower back. We have to stretch out before we can move through the day. Go on, Carol.
Or how about your body feels heavy and difficult to move? And I've experienced that myself going up 3 flights of stairs to my apartment on some days. It seems like it's very difficult just to move my body along. And I hadn't thought of potassium deficiency, but that could have been going on. A dizziness when getting up quickly, when leaning over, potassium has an important part in maintaining your blood pressure, maintaining a normal blood pressure. A dull morning headache when you're getting up in the morning and you're feeling stressed. But here's some things that really caught my eye was how the quality of your hair. And we're concerned about hair a lot in our society, and we should be, because it's our calling card. It's part of us, you know, what we present to the outside world. So low potassium has dull, faded-looking hair that lacks sheen and luster, and the scalp can be itchy and dry. We might have dandruff. We might have a premature hair thinning or even balding, and that seems to be more and more rampant. So I don't know how many people have checked with their practitioners for low potassium. It's not so easy to check. Or the hair is unmanageable. It mats and it looks straw-like. So that important public appearance, everybody's concerned about how their hair looks when they go out. So potassium could be a very important piece of this puzzle to our health, and how your hair is behaving and looking is essential. So let's look at a little potassium for that.
I want to go back to something you said, which is ringing in my ears and brain right now, blood pressure. So many of us, when our blood pressure comes a little high, we're taken off of salt. And there we are, and we're swelling a little bit or a lot. Our ankles, our feet, our hands look like little sausages. And very often, we can appropriately give potassium, and our blood pressure can normalize. How can that be? Our blood pressure can normalize, and in the next day or the day after of having adequate potassium, we look at the swelling in our feet, our ankles, our hands, and it's gone. So when we're looking at adequate, appropriate potassium, what we're looking at is reducing swelling and reducing blood pressure. Essential.
I think you were telling me about a patient of yours that you had come in, had somebody come in and with obvious swollen ankles. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, as a specific patient, I'm not sure, but what I see very often is swollen people with very low energy, brain fog. This is another one. Low potassium is very connected to brain fog. And they come in and they say they want to do a detox. Well, you know, when people are that frail and having difficulty, weakness and brain fog, detox is not the first way I want to go. I want to build them up before we do and attempt to work on detoxing. But I've seen people go on this celery juice every day in the morning, fresh squeezed celery juice. And if they come into me, I add something else. I add a little cucumber. And what happens? The results are kind of stunning. They're beyond what you would anticipate they should be. Their mind clears. Their energy goes up. Their focus gets stronger. And at the same time, their swelling goes down just precipitously. So what we have here is we have a complete turnaround with celery juice. How could that be? Well, celery and cucumber are very high in potassium. And so what you're doing is you're giving a fluid, you're giving the potassium, which is then creating a balance that they were in an imbalance at the time, and they felt that they needed an adjustment. And I see that quite regularly. I am a fan of celery juice. I really am, because I see the results. And there's lots of, you know, whenever there's a fad going around, there's lots of hype and hyperbole, a lot of these promises. But I see some very good results with this cleansing celery juice. Have you, Carol? I like to add a little cabbage to that, too.
Oh, I have to check in with my sister. She just started this celery juicing.
Oh, nice.
The medical medium wrote a book about it.
About celery.
So another place where potassium deficiency shows up is in the eyes. The eyes can itch and feel sore, and they might look bloodshot and watery. You can have granulations with white matter, and then you might be thinking it's an infection, but it's actually the low potassium. And your eyes can tire, and you become having difficulties with focusing your eyes. So here's another body area where potassium deficiency shows up quite clearly.
Well, the question I have, Carol, is, and this is where we're going to focus now, is how did we become so potassium deficient? Where do we, should we start taking pills? I see the pills, they're about 97 milligrams. They're, or 100 milligrams, they're not high. And when you're taking straight potassium without any of the other mineral balance, what you can do is create imbalance. So I'm always nervous about just taking straight potassium pills unless there is a problem and it needs to be addressed. But there are some very direct reasons why we get potassium deficient. One of them, I'm going to throw this out to start this, are diuretics.
Oh, they're the worst. And that's actually the first thing a doctor will place you on if you have high blood pressure in his office. They'll start with a diuretic simply because they assume that if they reduce the blood volume that your body carries around, your blood pressure will go down, and it does. But it's at the cost of a lot of minerals, but potassium is a big one. Diarrhea and vomiting will deplete potassium. Saunas, if you sweat during your work or you go use saunas without replacing your minerals and particularly potassium, you're going to get yourself into a potassium deficiency.
There are a multitude of foods that are high in potassium, and we're going to go through some of them. One of them, which is very high in potassium, are beet tops. And the tops of beets, a bunch of those, or a serving of those, can be 1,300 milligrams of potassium just in the beet green. And they're delicious when you cook them up. I cook them. I clean them and then put them in a pan with olive oil and garlic and onion. Now, garlic and onion are very high in quercetin, and so are most greens. They have a degree of quercetin. But then I brown them and then serve them with my meal. And you could be giving your family and yourself 1,300 milligrams of potassium with an evening meal. Another one that's really well known is avocado. Avocado is lovely, and you get 975 milligram plus or minus with each average size avocado. It's absolutely lovely. And then, you know, potassium, because the body needs so much of it, is in multiple foods. It's not just isolated and difficult to get. If it was, we couldn't get what we needed. But lima beans, how many of us eat lima beans? As a child, my grandmother used to make lima beans all the time and serve it up. But on top of the lima bean, she would make a mixture where she would chop up carrots, chop up onions, a little bit of garlic, and a little bit of tomato. And then she would serve the bowl of lima beans and scoop up this vegetable mixture and put it right in the center so it was like a light color to this white soup. It was absolutely delicious. Then we're looking at spinach, squash, salmon. Salmon has a lot of potassium. And Brussels sprouts. Brussels sprouts also have a lot. So I can imagine that cabbage has quite a bit also. You've got some things to add to that list, don't you, Carol?
Well, I have a lot.
Oh, good. Thanks.
There's a very famous recipe you can find on the internet, and I posted one of them at our Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne and Carol. It's called potassium broth. And you put various vegetables. The recipe I posted has beets and beet greens, potato skins, celery. Here we go again with the celery. And onions. And you cook that for 1 to 4 hours. And you drink the broth. Other people will have recipes. And some say drink, you know, eat the whole thing. But all of those vegetables are really high in potassium and a really good pickup for people who are experiencing low potassium. So I'd like to go through a few things I found, and it's actually in level of what has the most potassium. Parsley is really rich in potassium. Chevrel, another green.
Parsley. How could we get enough potassium out of parsley? It's called tabbouleh salad. Tabbouleh salad, all parsley, all chopped up with a little olive oil, a little onion. Delicious. What's the next one, Carol?
Coriander seeds. Now, those coriander seeds, aren't those the seeds that are served to you just as you're leaving the Indian restaurant after you've had your nice curries and everything? You can have a little spoonful of coriander seeds that are covered with candy and you chew on those seeds. Those seeds are actually really rich in potassium. In the Middle Ages, coriander seeds were considered a love potion.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting? And
perfect for Valentine's Day.
Yeah. So many people do use coriander seeds. Like, you can do a tablespoon of the seeds in water, soak it overnight in the morning, drink the juice and chew on the seeds. Or some people make a tea out of the coriander seeds, and that will all boost your potassium. Coffee really is astonishing high. It's 3,500 milligrams and 100 grams.
Of wow.
Radish.
Sun-dried
tomatoes have 3,600 milligrams per 100 grams. Dill, very rich, green peppers. Chives, basil. This is starting to sound like a salad, is it not? I
can't. It's starting to sound delicious. Carrots? What about carrots?
Carrots, 2,500 milligrams per 100 gram of carrots.
Wow.
So that is really astonishing how rich that is. You know, we are told all the time to have a banana for potassium, particularly those people who have been placed on diuretics. Their doctors tell them to eat a banana every day, but that's only 350 milligrams per 100 grams. So the carrots are astonishingly much more abundant in potassium. Here's some more. Paprika. Apricots have 1,850 milligrams per 100 grams. Potatoes, as mentioned before, potatoes are in that potassium broth, and it's 1,800 milligrams per 100 grams of potatoes.
And most of it is in a large portion of it is in the skin.
Yeah.
So I always, even if I mash potatoes, which I don't often, mostly I steam them and then cut them up and put a little oil or a little butter and rosemary over the top and parsley over the top. But I always leave the skin on. But how about sweet potatoes, Carol?
I don't know.
Yes, sweet potatoes are right in there also. As I'll jump right in there. The sweet potatoes are right in there also, as well as the potatoes. You know, when I started this and started doing the research and to really look at this to be able to share, I thought it was green vegetables that made the potassium broth and made potassium available to us. And I found out it's much broader than that. First of all, the colored vegetables and fruits have lots of potassium. Nuts and seeds have potassium, some potassium. But guess what else? Salmon has potassium. So you've got this wide variety. Yogurt has potassium. You have this wide variety of wonderful foods that you can eat daily and enhance your body's ability to uptake potassium, which, what does it do? It helps our brain function. It balances our blood pressure. It balances our fluid control. It helps us maintain stamina and muscle strength. My goodness. It's a plus, yeah. Plus, plus.
Okay, here's another one. Apple cider vinegar is very rich in potassium. And there was one of the original nutritionists who wrote many things about lots of supplements, Bernard Jensen, and about your colon and your elimination and all that. He started out being raised on a farm. He was very healthy and robust, and he saved somebody's life. And they gave him tuition to go to a military school. And as he went to school, he found that his health was diminishing. The quality of the food was very bad at the school. So especially compared to what he had been exposed to before. And he even developed TB. And he realized after a little while that this diet change was contributing to his bad health. So he changed, but he attributes his daily use of apple cider vinegar as what really turned him around. And after a couple of years, he had no signs of TB either. So that was quite remarkable. Now, you can see in the stores all over the place now, apple cider vinegar gummies. I just love those. however, gummies, and the gummies are my downfall, no matter what's in it. But they have a lot of sugar, quite a lot of sugar. So I've made my own gummies. I use apple cider vinegar, but it's too intense all by itself. So I use, like, really strong flavored juices like cranberry, grape,
pomegranate,
as something to dilute the apple cider vinegar with. And so then I carefully add my gelatin and create all these wonderful gummies without any extra added sugar. But you have to use some intense flavored juices to make these taste good. So you don't have to buy the ones in the grocery store. There's many recipes on the internet how to make gummies, and you'll be surprised and delighted how wonderful they are.
Now, there are different dietary and physical conditions that create low potassium, and I'm going to go through them. And number one is dietary. You know, we've stopped sitting down and having our family meals, our family dinners. We've stopped insisting that our children and ourselves eat vegetables as a large portion of eating together. And we see that in our health, in our emotional health, but also in our family health, because food has many, many purposes. One is health. The other is our cultural heritage and our flavors and our tastes. How many times do we walk into a room and we smell that smell? And at least for me, I can smell the smell of my grandmother in the kitchen cooking the Sunday meal. It is an essential association of warmth, a sense of security and caring, which is beautiful to carry with us, and it's very deep. But so number one cause of potassium deficiency, which is not pathology. We're not talking about pathologies here. We're talking about lifestyle. What we're talking about is dietary. The next are diuretics, and we clearly spoke about that. Then vomiting and diarrhea. But then diabetes. What happens is there's a little teeter-totter between potassium and insulin. And we have seen that when you raise the insulin, that it's very possible, and we watch it, that the potassium goes down. But also, when you raise the potassium, the need for insulin goes down. So sometimes those what they call brittle diabetics that can't be controlled, when you get them adequate potassium, they can go into control and lower some of their insulin level. Very important. High sugar and high carb diets make the body excrete potassium at a higher level. So that's the connection with diabetes, but also lots of stress, emotional and physical. Physical with sweating, but also emotional uses up our potassium. And the ability to be calm, if we don't have adequate potassium, we're not going to feel calm enough to make it through that stress. But then there's another thing, and it's kind of interesting, and you're going to say, well, my goodness, how could this be? Keto diets, if not done correctly, can make potassium deficiencies or reductions. So our bodies, you know, very often they call it a keto fever or a keto flu. That's it. I was looking for that term. Thank you, Carol. Keto flu. And what has happened is that because the proteins have gone up, the sugars have gone down, the fluids have gone down, the potassium precipitously drops. And what are the results? Exactly what we've been talking about: weakness, brain fog, fatigue, all of that. And that's called the keto flu. You can avoid that by creating in your keto lots of vegetables and even potassium broths that you sip throughout the day. And you can knock that out or even avoid that phenomenon completely. Carol?
Yeah, the feeling of nervousness, depression, even getting tremors.
Exactly.
And feeling exhausted and upset, the slightest thing throws you off. Or your hands and feet could get chilled, even in warm weather, with the potassium deficiency. Low potassium, along with low magnesium, is thought to be responsible for congestive heart failure. And we have connections with arthritis, kidney stones. We talked about atrial fibrillation before, where the rhythm of the heart is altered. Adrenal insufficiency, sometimes this feels like keto flu. Celiac disease. In fact, all those inflammation of the intestines type of diseases, celiac and IBS, irritable bowel, those are going to cause severe depletions of potassium. Coronary artery disease, low thyroid is associated with low potassium, Alzheimer's disease, MS. So there's many, many things that have an association with low potassium that we can make changes in by making changes in our diet. So Linda Page, a naturopath, has produced a really nice list of the deficiencies of potassium and the association with some of these diseases. And I've also put that on our Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne and Carol. And we'd like to invite you also to post any questions you have there after you take a look at our site. If you have any questions, if you have anything that you'd like us to bring up, please post over on our Facebook page. We really appreciate it.
I want to go back to two of the things, well, actually many of the things, but I'm going to focus on two that you brought up. One, rheumatoid arthritis. Potassium is an essential piece of bringing down that inflammation that people are experiencing with rheumatoid arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis is an inflammatory disease and very acidic. Potassium is very alkaline. And very often, with regularity, by bringing up the potassium level, you can lower the inflammation, lower the pain, lower the swelling with adding and eating very high potassium foods. But there's a couple other things. You know, uric acid, gout, it's an acidic disease. When you add potassium and magnesium, you can quiet the pain and quiet that disease. It can be dramatic. A very important piece of managing gout. But then there's one other thing. I see a lot of patients get recurring uric acid or calcium stones and kidney stones. There's nothing more painful than kidney stones. And some people, it continues, it recurs, it passes, then it recurs. It's almost like I see it in my mind, like one of those rock gardens like the kids have, that you put water in a bottle and these rocks start forming. And what are they? They're mineral rocks, and one forms and releases and there's 20 more forming. I'm watching them as they're growing, and that's the way I see kidney stones. But what you can do is increase your potassium, which alkalizes, increase your magnesium, which also alkalizes, and you can increase your waters and some vitamin C. And it's very possible you can shift that reoccurrence, and it can be quite powerful.
Well, I wanted to bring up something very interesting, and this was introduced by Dr. Jonathan Wright, who's also famous as being a nutritionally minded physician and had big conferences and has written a lot. He's had a newsletter for many, many years. So he brings up what happened in Finland, and deaths from stroke and heart disease plummeted by 60% in that entire country.
Wow.
And what did they do? They had a salt mixture that they started using for table salt. And this salt mixture contains sodium, potassium, magnesium, and L-lysine, which is also very cardioprotective. So they do all their cooking and salting of their food with this mixture. So Dr. Wright was so excited about this. He actually created his own Wright salt with that same mixture, which you can find also at his website or on the internet. So here's another way you can introduce potassium into your diet with the salt. Another way is if you look on your grocery shelf, people are looking for salt substitutes. What is the mineral that is used for a salt substitute? It's potassium. You'll find potassium in those salt substitutes. So you can incorporate some of those salt substitute products into your seasoning of your food and get more potassium. So it's easy to get there if you're looking for some additional potassium without going to supplements, which are also available.
Could you list what is in the Wright salt again, please?
Sure. It's sodium, potassium, magnesium, and lysine.
Interesting. Very interesting. Now, except for the lysine, don't we find a lot of that in the salts, in the natural salts? Not the sodium chloride that with the little girl and the umbrella and the salt. Not that one, but natural salts that are from the Mediterranean, Brittany salt. The Himalaya salt. The Himalaya salt I love. It's absolutely wonderful. And it's chock full of minerals, including some iron and some zinc. So it's absolutely wonderful. The thing that is missing, though, because it's from, is the iodine. So I always I always depend a little bit on my salts. But we live by the ocean. So we're getting lots of iodine in the soil, and I put seaweed over my garden every year to help make the soil richer. So I know we're getting enough iodine, but for those people listening, they might want to add seaweed to their food so they're getting adequate iodine. You don't want one electrolyte or one mineral to dominate the playing field. It's a symphony and it's a balance, and some take more than others. Potassium, particularly, you need more potassium than you need sodium. You need more potassium than you need calcium, and more potassium than you need magnesium. But you're still juggling those balls, and to put just potassium and high dose can be toxic. You always want the balance, and that's what I always attempt to work with.
Isn't it interesting you can go into a grocery store now and you have a gourmet salt section?
Oh, yes.
You can find salts from all over the world. And you'll have different flavors, different concentrations of minerals. So I think that's quite fascinating. We've added a whole dimension to our intake of minerals that never in the history of mankind have we had that kind of variety of salts to choose from.
You know, Carol, as we speak, I'm listening. And I'm listening, and as we're discussing the problems that we're seeing with low potassium and the weakening of the whole adrenal function, what am I seeing? I'm seeing many of my post-COVID patients. What do they experience? Brain fog, shortness of breath, irregular heartbeats, fatigue, no stamina, difficulty walking up the stairs because of the strength and the shortness of breath. Well, I'm going to be working now more since we discussed this, because yeah. I learn as I prepare and as I work with you and as we discuss it, I'm going to be working more with potassium to see if the potassium can help pull these people out of this hole that they're in. And that's the way I see it. I literally see it as a hole that they used up their reserves fighting this darn virus. And now they're experiencing a life with no reserves, and they're trying to build themselves up again. And I think potassium will be a very important piece of that, of strengthening the adrenals and strengthening the entire body to be able to build up their energy. What do you think, Carol?
Well, this is very interesting because I was quite astonished to find an amazing piece published in the Orthomolecular Journal, and it was about treating PMS with potassium.
Huh.
And I thought, all these years I've been working with hormones, I learned something new almost every week, and this just took me by surprise. So the person writing this had treated herself and other people with increasing potassium, and the symptoms of PMS, irritability, headaches, water retention, suicidal thoughts sometimes, or homicidal thoughts sometimes can be there in some very severe PMSers. And what she referred to was a study by Badwani and Wong where they showed that progesterone release was inhibited by low potassium.
Wow.
And this made the LH from the pituitary luteinizing hormone stimulates the ovaries to produce progesterone, and in a low potassium situation, that signal, the intensity of the signal, was lost to the ovaries. So I was quite gobsmacked by that. One other thing that I'd like to bring up that we haven't talked about that depletes potassium is sulfonamide antibiotics. And this may be coming in with your situation with COVID, because sometimes people are developing bacterial infections and they're being treated with antibiotics. And this would be like Bactrim and Ceftra are in this class of antibiotics. These are severe depleters of potassium. Current, how do you test for potassium deficiency in your office?
Well, there's a potassium test on a standard blood electrolyte panel. And what you see is you see a range. And what happens is that a low normal generally means weakness or adrenal weakness. People don't feel well in a low normal range. They feel much better in a high normal range. So we're looking at 4.8, right in there. or 4.6, 4.5, but when we go a lot lower than that, you see, and you can literally see, you can look at the potassium level and see adrenal weakness, that their adrenals are weak, and they're not able to produce the amount of energy that they need for day-to-day activities. It's an easy test. It's a standard test. It's an accurate test.
One of the interesting things about that test is the range of normal is quite tight, very, very little. And it indicates that your body does a lot to keep potassium in that level. Some of the other minerals we have intracellular tests. You do a red blood cell or another cell to test inside the cell. Are there tests like this for potassium?
I'm not aware of it. And it's interesting because the majority of potassium in our body is intracellular. But
right,
yet
right.
We're testing serum. We're looking at serum and then able to correlate or extrapolate what we're dealing with in terms of intracellular. But the majority of potassium snuggles right in there in the gel of our cells. You know, Carol, you know what we forgot? And this is an important one. Coconut. Coconut water is a very high natural electrolyte balance, but also very high in potassium. So the other day after we got off the radio talking about potassium, I went home, because my son is totally involved in sports, pulled out our coconut water and made him some crepes. But instead of using water, I used coconut water. And I also gave him some a smoothie, and the base of that smoothie was coconut water and berries and some nuts. He loved it, and it's so good for him. It's so high in potassium, and he had so much stamina, and I'll announce over the radio they won their volleyball game. What a pleasure. Must have been the potassium. That's what it was. But I did that right after we spoke because, you know, yes, I am a nutritionist. Yes, we work with patients. But sometimes in our own lives, we forget. And it takes little reminders, like I have Carol to remind me and nudge me. And you out there have us to listen to and to hear and to support you in changes that make your life healthier. I received this quote by Michael Pollan, and let me read it to you. It's just lovely and simple, but directly to the point of what we've been speaking about all this time. And it says, "The decline of everyday home cooking doesn't only damage the health of our bodies and our land, but also our families, our communities, and our sense of how our eating connects us to the world and our cultures. Cooking can be fun, freeing, and essential to achieving health and happiness. What do you plan to cook today?" That's what I thought. That was really lovely. And I've seen on, I think it's Netflix, a series by Michael Pollan where he goes into different communities and cooks different kinds of foods. And it's only four episodes long, but it's beautiful, where he really is connecting the foods we eat to the quality of our life, to the sharing in the community, and directing it to our health. And it's a beautiful series. I was quite impressed with it.
I had an interesting experience last night. I went to an Italian restaurant with friends, and we got the menu, and one of my friends wanted chicken, something like chicken parmigiana or something like that. The server says, "We're an Italian restaurant."
Hello?
I guess that means chicken parmigiana might be Italian-American or something. And so we asked some further questions, and it turns out that the chef is from Sardinia.
Oh, pork. Pork and fish.
Fish. There was some beef, a little bit of pork in the menu. And I had pasta with squid with its own ink.
Oh, my goodness.
Clam sauce with that. And it was just amazingly delicious. And this particular chef wants to bring the foods from that area of Italy to his restaurant. So all the things, the oils, the cheese, the pasta, is all made in Sardinia. It also reminds me of another restaurant I went to that imported all the wheat from Italy to make their pasta. And I was in there and I asked if they had gluten-free options. And they said, no, no gluten-free options. But they said that people who are gluten-sensitive usually don't have any problem at all with their pasta.
Because
so it reminded me that there's a different quality of food. Like in a country like Italy, which still depends on local and small farms, they don't have factory farms there, that the quality of the food that you get in those areas is exquisitely different than what we experience normally here in the U.S. So it was a lovely meal and a reminder of how food could be, should be, so thoughtfully prepared and grown and raised.
You know, Carol, you came to a very important observation, and one of it is that, well, in Italy they use our wheat, but they also grind it themselves on their land, and so they're not using the bromine, which acts as a thiamine blocker because it's a halogen, as a slippery agent or a preservative. They're using iodine, which we used to use in this country, but it is a little bit more expensive, and so we switched to bromine. Well, that was, I think, a big no-no. But the other thing is that a lot of their wheat is not our specific germ wheat. It's semolina, and it's not a hybrid. So what you have is a very digestible form of wheat. And I found that if I eat wheat here too much, I swell up. But when I go to Europe, I don't. And yet I can eat wheat every day. And I do believe that part of it is the wheat that they have available, but also the way they grind the wheat and the fact that it's fresh daily. It's interesting because I saw a series on Italian cooking, and one area they went to is Sardinia. And Sardinia is very mountainous. Big pastures don't really, they're minimal, if at all, in Sardinia. It's big cliffs and then terraced out areas. So you have more small types of animals being raised there. So you have lots of goats, lots of pigs, lots of chicken. And Sardinia is famous for the quality of their pork. And what do? They feed their pork chestnuts. So their pork is particularly sweet and particularly delicious and famous throughout the world, but particularly through Italy. People come to Sardinia just to eat the foods and the sausages because the taste of it is so unique and so special. But let me tell you, we're at the end of our show. We really don't have time for this, but I'm going to tell you a story. Once I went to Brazil on a conference, and I'm sitting there, and I go into an Italian restaurant, and I say I want a fennel salad. They cut me up a fennel salad, and my friends and I, what?
High in potassium.
Wow! Oh yes, also my friends and I are eating it. It's like this orgasmic experience. It is so delicious. It was amazing. And we just couldn't get enough of it. And we call the waiter over, and he's looking at us like we're crazy because we're all going, oh, my gosh, how delicious. We said, what have you put in the salad? And he said, olive oil? And what you're dealing with is the quality of the olive oil, the quality of the fennel, the quality of the soil. And it was delicious. So it doesn't have to be second best. It can be best, and better than best. And the name of the series, the Michael Pollan series on food, is called Cooked, and it's on Netflix. So enjoy it. You might enjoy an evening of that. Okay, Carol, thank you so much. I always learn.
Yes. I just looked up potassium in chestnuts for that Sardinian diet for the pigs. That 118 milligrams per 100 grams of chestnuts, you get potassium.
Not bad. And all that sweetness. Okay. Yes. We'll be back next week. Thank you for spending this time with us. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.